Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Telerik. Create compelling app experiences across any screen with the Telerik platform. Telerik's end-to-end platform uniquely combines industry-leading UI tools with cloud services to simplify the entire app development cycle. Telerik offers everything .NET developers need to build quality apps faster. Try it free at telerik.com/platform. That's telerik.com/platform.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 501. In this episode, Scott talks with Purnima Vijayashankar about speaking up and improving your communication skills.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today we're talking with Purnima Vijayashankar from Femgineer. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
I appreciate you chatting with me today. I have looked all over your web presence, and you've got a really great, really compelling YouTube channel. You've got books and pamphlets and information and a company that all seem to be around empowerment. I would even say around getting people to speak up. Why is speaking up so important?
As techies, whether we are technical or even I've seen this happen with marketers and product managers, people get into this idea that you've just got to be heads down. You've got to crank through, ship code, ship product, and you'll get recognized for your efforts. But too often, that doesn't happen. And it's not even just about career advancement. It's also about connecting with customers. It's about letting people know about your new company if you're a startup. And so there's got to be this balance between the time that we spend doing the technical work and presenting ourselves in public.
Why do we think that heads down became such a desirable or presumed desirable thing culturally? When did that start, that we were, get your head down, I'm really heads down on this project?
Well, for starters, it's gratifying. At the end of the day, you can point to something and say, I built that, or I fixed that. And that's what we want to feel at the end of the day, right? We want to feel like we did something, we accomplished something. And so it's very easy to put your finger and point to something that you accomplished. It's very hard to say, I talked to 10 customers, or I went out and gave this talk at a conference, because you can't quantify what the results are. And as techies, we love to quantify things, right? We love to get things done, and we love to quantify things. And so it's very hard for us to not be heads down.
You know, that you've like really nailed, like, that's my job right now, you know, like before it was tests, passes and lines of code written. But like after this, I'm going to go into downtown Portland. I'm going to talk at a conference. You know, I'm going to, what do I say? You know, touch the lives of 50 people and they all seem to appreciate what I had to say. Like, how do you quantify that in a way that makes you feel like your boss is not going to fire you?
Yeah, you don't. I mean, the purpose isn't to quantify. The purpose is to take a time out to go out and actually do some qualitative work, meaning talking to customers, seeing how they're reacting to your product, or going out and spreading the word about your product, your company, whatever, and seeing how people respond to it. And it's important to have this balance between the qualitative and the quantitative and to get that feedback. So it's not always about measuring, but it is about taking a time out to hear what other people think of our products and to make that one-on-one connection.
Is that something that every engineer should do?
I think on some level, I think it comes down to, you know, what their responsibilities are. You know, if you are an individual contributor and your goal is to ship product, then it's fair to say you would set a goal of maybe one talk a quarter, or at least one talk every 6 months, because, you know, you're definitely on the assembly line, versus you're a VP of engineering or you're a CTO. your job is to recruit, or at least one of the main goals of your job is to recruit. So it's important for you to be out there speaking and spreading the word about your company. So it does come down to, I think, a job role or job function. But that's not to say that the engineer couldn't speak as many times as they would like, or the CTO or, you know, VP of engineering couldn't be writing some level of code. But I think it's important that everybody takes the time out to do something as simple as speaking up in a meeting or doing a user group.
So you're advocating for people to be well-rounded.
Yes, definitely.
Do you find that to be a challenge? Has that been a challenge historically for you?
I think for me, it has not been a challenge. Whether or not it's been rewarded is a different conversation. And I think that's where a lot of people feel like, even though they may be open to speaking up, whether it's in a meeting or at a conference, they either feel like people are going to see it as a waste of time, like you mentioned, you know, you can't quantify it, or they might even be shot down. You know, their ideas might not be heard. So over time, they stop doing it as much. So we can kind of get into what that means, but I think people generally initially want to be well-rounded. Not everyone's like, oh, I'm just going to write code forever, right? They understand the importance of talking to customers, getting feedback, talking to their teammates. But I think over time, they start to become more and more reclusive.
Yeah, and I don't think that anyone wants to. I mean, there are people, and I have been on the, you said the assembly line. No one like aspires to the assembly line,
right?
They would like to be a part of the larger machine and appreciated and a valued member of the team. They recognize that you have to put your heads down sometimes and crank out some code, but I don't think anyone aspires to like top out at the assembly line.
Right.
So speaking up is extremely important, do you think? Is it important because it feeds someone's spirit, or is it important because it is going to help their career? Why should someone speak up? Why can't I just be quiet?
Well, I think it's multifaceted. It's not just one thing, right? So, I think the first is, regardless of what we say, people need to be heard. Their ideas need to be heard, whether it's a good idea or not. You know, in a traditional brainstorming session, one of the golden rules is everybody gets to chime in and ideas will not be judged, right? We save that for later on when we're paring down, figuring out what's feasible, etc. But in general, people need to feel like they're heard. And the same thing happens in like a post-mortem session. And so I think in general, people need to be heard by their teammates, as well as, you know, upper level management. Otherwise, they will start to feel like that cog in the assembly line. So I think that's the first. The second is, it's also important for other people to learn about you. You know, other folks on the team, they need to understand how you make decisions. They need to understand how you think. And a lot of times when we don't speak up or we hold back, then people don't even get to know about who we are, where our interests might lie or where our expertise might lie. So that's another way to engage with our teammates. And then I think the final part of this is, you know, certainly more of the directed, like, oh, we have certain things that we need to communicate, whether it's like deadlines or product features or et cetera. Those are more transactional, I would say. So we have to get that out. But it's really about the first two. It's about, you know, being heard and people getting to know about us. And if those things don't happen, then again, we tend to be more reclusive.
Interesting. Someone told me once, and I don't know what I think about this statement, but it was an interesting one, that you teach people how to treat you. Now, I think that there's implicit biases, there are explicit biases, there's all sorts of context, both historical and personal, that leads someone to an interaction with someone else. But once we're face to face, like you and I are right now, we're teaching each other how to treat each other, whether it be through interruptions or eye contact or all those things. Do you think that applies to engineers that maybe are less likely to speak up?
Definitely. So it's important everybody set boundaries. And the only way you can set boundaries is to actually explain what those boundaries are, right? So if you tell somebody, I can't meet this deedline, then the follow-up question, hopefully the follow-up question is, you know, why, what is it that's holding you back? Are you stuck? Do you need to learn, et cetera? And hopefully that, you know, person on the receiving end is asking those questions. So that's great. But I think the other part is, you know, our teammates, our bosses, are not mind readers, and they don't know if we're being overworked or if we are stuck. So it's up to us to speak up. Now, mind you, there are some toxic teams out there. I understand where even if you say this, they won't recognize it. But it's still your job to initiate. And if it's not recognized, then, you know, finding an environment where it will be recognized.
Yeah, it is challenging. Sometimes when there are interactions, you may not necessarily be responsible for a bad interaction, but you're accountable for how you decide to deal with that going forward.
Yep.
Now, you have got, your company does online training and books and all sorts of stuff, but one thing that you do that I think is really interesting is you have a online training that is on being a confident communicator. So this is like a course that someone could take if they wanted to go out and become a public speaker and do user groups or do big conferences.
Exactly. Yeah. So the goal of that course is to take you from either you haven't done any speaking before or you've done some and you really want to do more, whether that's internally at your company, onboarding new employees or customers, or you want to be more public facing. You want to get out there, be on the conference circuit, talking to folks. So we walk you through the course step by step to get you to a point where at the end you have developed a lightning talk as well as a long form talk around an area of expertise. Now, you might not know what your area of expertise is coming in, and that's okay, because part of the course is to teach you. A lot of folks have trouble with that. They might have been coding for 2 years, 20 years, and they don't feel like they're an expert. But if I recall one of your previous podcasts, you said, you know, you're an enthusiastic amateur. And so our goal is to get people to feel like an enthusiastic amateur, and hopefully better than that, but to figure out what that particular enthusiasm is, like what the topic is that they want to speak about.
And it's okay. Like, it's important to say that out loud. It's okay for amateurs to talk about an area that they are enthusiastic about. You don't have to be an expert to give a talk on a topic.
Totally. And the reason is because, you know, when I first graduated from college, I got invited to speak a lot. And I was a little bit stunned because I was like, 2 years out of college. But a lot of people said, well, we want you to come because and speak to college kids because they're just like you. And they can see what life would be like 2 years from now. If we brought in a CEO who's been in the industry for 20 years, they're going to feel like, oh, my gosh, that's so far away. How will I ever get there? And so it's important to have people speaking at various stages, not just Fortune 500 CEOs, but even folks who are 6 months, 12 months, or 2 years in to a project or their careers.
Mm-hmm. I think also that people look at people, and when I say people, I mean you all, the listener. You maybe look at people who give talks, who are known for giving talks, and you see that as some kind of a destination. But they also think that there's one-on-one communication, and then there's talking to 2,000 people. But it really is a gradient of communication skills, isn't it?
It is. And that's actually one of the techniques that we cover pretty heavily in our course and in the upcoming book as well, is this concept of getting comfortable having one-on-one conversations with your teammates, you know, your boss, your peers, and then expanding to what I call a mini audience. Maybe that's 5 people or 10 people, could be a user group of 30, and then going from there to maybe 100, 1,000, right? Nobody goes from 0 to 10,000 overnight. And so it's getting comfortable in those settings. And that's really what helps you get over your stage fright. But it's also what helps you to understand what's resonating as your audience grows.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that an audience of multiple people might be 5 people. It might be the 5 important people who need to hear your message at your job. It doesn't mean you necessarily need to go and speak at the next big conference, or you even need to speak at a user group.
Definitely. And I would say the audience management is definitely different between those two. I know a lot of people I've actually spoken to who do the 50 or 500 actually tell me that they get scared when they have to present in front of 5 because it feels very intimate. They're sort of put on the spot. It might be somebody like a decision maker, you know, in their company. And so the stakes are higher than talking to like 500 people in a big audience.
You know, that reminds me of a time I was giving a presentation to about 40 people at a company I'd never been to before. And it was not until the very end when someone kind of left at the very, very end. And then someone said, that was the president of the company. And frankly, I was glad they didn't tell me beforehand because I would have given a different talk. Like, it would have had a different feeling. I was very real and raw. And it turns out they appreciated that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize that in myself, I would have torpedoed myself, for lack of a better word, if I'd known that the founder of the company was sitting. You know, I just thought it was a random person, you know? Yeah. You can't assume things about your audience.
Right. And that's okay. I mean, you want people to feel your almost authentic self. You don't want to be filtered, because if you do, then you just don't come off as appealing. You know, audiences can sense when you're nervous, but they can also sense when you're being disingenuous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you believe that the career doors open when people get their communication skills tuned in. And this is a skill that you learn. There are people who are built to speak, but you really believe this can be taught.
It definitely. I actually have a pretty traditional background. You know, I was definitely that shy kid who hid behind my mother's skirt for a long time. And it wasn't until, I wanted to be a lawyer, obviously decided against that career path. But when I found out, or at least when I decided I want to be a lawyer, I knew, okay, I've got to suck it up and I've got to start taking public speaking courses. So yes, I was that high school debate nerd and went through and learned all the mechanics behind public speaking. So it's definitely a skill that can be taught. And it's also a skill that you've got to hone over time. You know, the way I spoke in debate is not how I would get up and present today if I was presenting in front of customers or if I was speaking to college students. And so that too is important and evolves over time.
So you have the Confident Communicator course, and then just now in November, the Present, that's the name of the book, Present, the Techie's mm-hmm. Guide to Engaging an Audience book that's available now as well. In both of these courses, I assume that the course came first and then the book came out of the course?
Yes. So the course is actually much more in-depth. You know, mm-hmm. we go into some advanced topics. We go into topics like how to get paid to speak, if that's of interest to you, as well as some other scenarios. And the reason that we do it in the course is it gives us the ability to be more hands-on with our students. Mm-hmm. The goal of the book is to get you comfortable giving maybe that first talk, or if you have given your first talk and you felt like it wasn't polished or you didn't engage with the audience enough, then giving you some more step-by-step guidance to improving it. So the book is definitely more of a primer, and the course gets into more advanced topics.
Mm-hmm. And in the book, you talk about small groups as well as moving up to larger?
Yep. Each chapter basically is broken down. So, you know, we're starting with some of the basics around how do you come up with your topic? How do you test a topic in front of a really small group? Maybe it's a peer or your team. And then going from there to creating a short outline to practice from, you know, how to then go and speak to initial set of people and then grow your audience from there. So we're walking you through step by step to get you to a point at the end of the book where you have that final talk. And there are exercises in the book to guide you through that entire process.
So at the point that you are now, you said that on the way from high school up until now, you went through the high school debate direction. Now, I went through drama. So I was actually, a lot of people don't realize, I actually lettered in drama. So I have a high school letterman's jacket that people assume means I have some ability at sports. It in fact means nothing of the sort. I lettered in drama. Have you noticed any difference between the kinds of skills that one would develop in a dramatic or in an onstage kind of a sense versus doing debate, or are they the same thing?
Well, debate is very aggressive, right? Your whole goal during that, you know, hour or however long a session is to come off super confident, and you're almost talking at people the majority of the time. You know, there's some level of softening, but in general, you know, I would say it can be very aggressive. The type of speaking I do now is not at all aggressive, right? It is more inspirational. It's about empowering and it's about educating people. And when you do it in that kind of context, you have to be very, very careful about who your audience is, what's going to resonate with them. If you're showcasing a process or something new, it's repeatable and they can go out and repeat that. So it's very, very different. It probably mirrors more of an oratory, you know, TEDx style sort of speaking. So I did have to learn a new style, and I also had to learn how to identify my audience, because before the audience was very much the same. You know, it was other high school debaters, and then the judges who were previous high school debaters or college debaters. And so, it was very, I would say, limited in terms of its diversity. Whereas now, you know, I'm going to be talking to investors, customers, students, et cetera. And so I've got to be more comfortable changing my style up as well as changing my messaging.
Mm-hmm. I sometimes look at it as putting on different suits, which is funny because I don't really have any suits. But there's, you know, there's the talking to investors suit. There's talking to, you know, old bankers suit versus the talking to a bunch of young kids. Certainly you would teach high school kids very differently than you would teach adults an engineering topic. It seems to me when people initially get started speaking, they don't really differentiate as much. They just go out and they do whatever their default is. It seems like people really should think about their audience and put the correct suit on for that audience.
Yeah, I mean, as techies, we're used to building products, right? And what's the first thing that we do when we're building a product? We think about who's our user. What's the experience we want to give them? A talk is no different. You know, the only thing that's different is instead of developing a product, we're developing some content. Mm-hmm. But the mechanics are still the same. So we need to think through who the audience is going to be. What are some of the, you know, problems or pain points they might experience? What are some questions that might come up during a Q&A? And a lot of times, if the audience mirrors who we might have been when we're like conveying the experience, mm-hmm. then that's great. But there might be more, right? So there's even things that I recommend, like testing out what kinds of questions people might ask given the topic, so that you don't feel blindsided during a Q&A session. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of the parallels exist between building a product as well as building a talk. And that's important to keep in mind.
Do you think that people sometimes put so much work into their products and they don't put as much work into a talk, but the talk is a product in itself? Why aren't we doing A/B testing and trying it out with different people up front? You know, you can't just roll in and start talking.
Right. Well, it depends. Some people, I think, giving a talk for some people is like, oh, my boss came in and said, I have to do this presentation, so I'm going to whip something up and put it out there, right? Or a lot of times they're communicating some information that's been passed down to them. It's not always their own experience. You see this a lot with marketers and sales folks. But if when you take a look at content, I think you do want to take the time to take a step back and ask the question, you know, how is this going to impact the person listening? The other reason I think people fail to do this, or they don't necessarily think about it, is because they're just regurgitating an experience rather than thinking about it through the lens of, okay, I'm going to be presenting to a brand new engineer who's learning Python for the first time. What was my experience like? What might they experience? What might be some points that they might get stuck, right? So we don't necessarily take the time. Instead, we're like, oh, I had this amazing experience learning the Django framework, and now I'm going to tell you all about it. And that can be very one-sided. People still want to hear that. But again, you've got to craft it in a way that's going to be beneficial to them.
Yeah, I think empathy is what I'm hearing you say.
Exactly.
Really seeing it from their perspective and putting yourself in their shoes.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, A/B testing for talks is great. I think a lot of times people do a talk and then they're like, okay, well, that was done. It's totally okay to give the same talk multiple times, to refine it, to take feedback mm-hmm. from your audience and then figure out what some holes might be. But the goal isn't to just create a new talk every single time.
Yeah, definitely. I've got very kind of dry educational talks that I do, but I've also got one that I've been doing lately, which is a very light, fun, I call it edutainment. I've probably done it like 8 or 9 times. Probably there are some people who are sick of seeing it, but like any good speech, I swear it's getting better each time. You know,
yeah.
Like I'm getting to practice it on people at conferences.
And even those people who might have heard it before, I would be surprised if they didn't learn something new the next time, because there's always times where I go and see somebody speak and I maybe get 50%. I'm lucky if I get 75%, like as in retain it. Mm-hmm. So I typically ask them like, hey, if this was broadcast or there's a recording of it, can I check it out again? Especially if there was some sort of process involved, because I want to go back and revisit what they covered. I'm not going to sit there and scratch down notes the whole time. I want to be engaged.
Well, this is actually a perfect time to pivot and talk about something else. You did a talk at a TEDx talk. Mm-hmm. That was called Taking the Time to Tinker. And that really resonated with me. I think sometimes we get so focused on building product and making money and founding this and engineering that we forget that just trying to get an LED to light up can be a very inspirational kind of an experience. Can you talk to me about why it's important to tinker?
Yeah. Well, you know, I did that talk because I was appealing to two audiences. One, a group of people who may be a little bit afraid of technology. You know, they could be people who are young or mid-career or, you know, just in a completely different industry. But I wanted to get people more accustomed to playing with technology and being comfortable with breaking things and really taking it through a lens of a child. You know, a child doesn't really care if they break things unless they get yelled at. So as an adult, you know, hopefully no one's going to yell at you if you're doing this as a side project, right? So getting people more comfortable with that. And then to your point, actually, to discovering other areas. Like, I think a lot of times people get very stuck in, I'm a Rails developer or I'm a marketer. And they don't take the time to maybe go out and learn a new skill. It doesn't mean that the marketer has to become an engineer or the engineer has to become the marketer, but just kind of getting to know another discipline, one, to help with empathy, right? Understand who else is on your team, but two, to also just get a different viewpoint and see how that impacts your creativity long term. So I think that's important, but yeah, there's not enough time, I know, in people's day jobs to tinker. So telling them to work slowly, you know, it can be maybe just a small project they do once and then that's it, or even an hour a day, or even if it's not an hour a day, an hour a month or once a quarter, right? Just a little bit goes a long way.
Yeah, I think kind of tying the two threads between getting out of your comfort zone and giving presentations and getting out of your comfort zone and tinkering, it can be really challenging because someone might do their first speech and discover that they're not a natural.
Right.
Just as I tried to solder some wires together and discovered, apparently I'm not a natural at soldering. It can be really overwhelming to learn that I'm not awesome at everything. You know what I mean? I find consistently I'm not awesome at a lot of things, but it's still important.
Yeah. I can't think of anything. I remember being when I was a kid and thinking, oh, my first talk, it was horrible. It wasn't even about stage fright. It was more just like the content was bad, the presentation was bad, didn't have a lot of logical flow, and getting back that initial set of commentary was very disheartening, but necessary. And I think in that learning phase, you have to get comfortable with that, but you've got to take that first step. So I'm definitely more of the camp of I don't know if anything has come naturally to me. I know there are some people who are great. You know, they'll pick up something and start to work wonders. But I think for the vast majority of us out there, we definitely are more of a learn by doing and refining over time.
You know, I think that is a really, really valuable thing to remember, that it may come naturally to someone, but that just gets them up to a certain point. It's simply a jump start. You know, Serena Williams did not have instant success as a tennis player, right? She had a natural ability, but it's the hard work really that made it happen.
Definitely. Yeah. That will complement sort of your natural talents or your natural interests. But yeah, you've got to have both.
Absolutely. Now you are an engineer that worked at Mint. As I understand, was it your first place that you worked?
No, that was my second. Mm-hmm. That was my first startup, but it was my second job out of college.
And you have a double major in both electrical engineering and computer science.
Correct.
And while you were at Mint, is it true that you were the only woman on the staff at the early startup times?
Yes, I was the only woman engineer. We did have some other women in business functions, mm-hmm. Like the chief marketing officer, and in business development. So there were other women on the team, but I was the sole female engineer.
Mm-hmm. And was it that fact that it caused you to start FemEngineer?
So at the time, this was back in 2007, I wanted to get back into writing, and a couple friends of mine who, you know, were working at the company definitely encouraged me to start blogging. They were like, oh, it's what all the cool kids are doing. So I thought, okay, why not? and you know, you always get into this conundrum of like what to call a blog or what to call a domain.
Right.
And certainly PoornimaVijayashankar.com was going to be ridiculous, right? Just to search, to type in. I knew it would be. And I just thought about, what do I want to talk about? Well, I really want to talk about being an engineer, being in startups, building products. And since I just, you know, identified as like, hey, I'm female and engineer, why not call it Femgineer? That's how the name came out of it. And it kind of stuck to the theme of what I was working on at the time.
That's very cool. And now it is an education company, and you have a partner, and you're creating content and classes and all sorts of stuff.
Exactly.
That's fantastic. So your book, Present, I'll put again a link in the show notes, but it's up at, you can see it at femgineer.com/present-book, is out now. And can people get it on Amazon as well?
I think it'll probably be another month before it's out on Amazon,
okay.
But they can definitely get it on the site that you mentioned.
Very cool. There's a lot of great resources. And I would really encourage people, by the way, just a compliment to you and a direction to the listener. Your YouTube channel is really great. There's
Thank
a
you.
Lot of really good advice on your channel, and it's very professionally done.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for chatting with me today.
You're welcome.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.